Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us this week. When you have a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. Nice website. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy picks. Also, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there. And my frankly excellent automotive reviews. They live right there. They're excellent.
Uh-huh.
They're very good.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going below very good.
Okay.
All right. That voice is Jill Simonello, Managing Editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and freelance provocateur.
Provocateur. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you freelance.
I am freelance.
At different places.
At many places.
What a week it's been.
Yeah. Up, down, all around. Back down, back up.
So to make sense of this, I don't even have notes for this conversation.
Okay.
Because I don't need them. After the break, Sam Fiorani, Vice President of Global Forecasting at Auto Forecast Solutions, joins us to help us make some sense of the craziness.
Yes.
So we've got that going on. Jill, you missed a birthday last week.
Whose birthday did I miss?
Brendan Appel.
Oh, Brendan. I wished him happy birthday on Facebook.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Brendan of the Sons of Speed, quick shout out. Hope it was good. I think he turned like some benchmark number.
Like 90?
Like 90.
Okay.
Like 90.
Like 113, like your mom.
Yep. Yeah, Brendan's super old. Super old. Those guys are younger than me by like a fair clip. Makes me feel old.
They're older than me by a fair clip. So how in the heck old are they?
I don't think they are older than you.
I do.
I don't think so.
I think they're like 5 to 10 years older.
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
All right. I have some corrections here real quick. Terraza, we were talking about bad car names. Turns out Terraza is a real Spanish word.
Yeah.
A lot of people know Spanish. I wasn't going to get away with that one.
Okay.
So I made fun of it. But the guy, and I can't find his email now. If it was an email, it might have also been a Blue Sky, and I can't find the contact. But he let me know. He loves the show. Terraza, real name, it means patio or terrace.
You know what?
In Spanish.
I feel like that resonates.
Which makes me feel like having iced tea outside.
Well, and it feels like the car should be orange, like terracotta.
I don't know about that.
Yeah?
No.
Mm.
He also said to tell you that you have a nice voice.
Oh.
So there you go.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Although I will say I did read that comment, and I have to say there was a part of me that thought you left it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But no, apparently I say okay a lot and have some verbal tics.
Okay.
So there's now apparently a drinking game every time I say okay. So I'm just going to be like, okay, okay, okay.
I'm going to start saying
Okay.
Like the first thing you try to not do, I'm going to go, I'm going to return to it.
I know. So I will try to work on my verbal tics.
New topic, bad segue.
Well, duh.
John Volker wrote a piece in January.
Mm-hmm.
John Volker's been on the show, but he's an EV specialist. He's the EV expert, really.
Yes.
If you want to know about EVs, you check out John Volker's work. He's a great guy. Nice guy, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he was writing about solid-state batteries.
Okay.
I mentioned solid-state batteries because sometimes when we talk about solid-state batteries, it's like we're talking about fuel cells or hydrogen cars,
mm-hmm.
and that they're always 5 years away. And then 5 years later, they're 5 years away. But it seems like we're closing in.
I hope so.
But he was talking about what they are. And just so people know, in case they start hearing about this, solid-state batteries are basically lithium-ion batteries. But the electrolyte is no longer liquid. It's solid, which means that it is denser, can be placed more compactly in the battery.
Mm-hmm.
And it should reduce the weight of the battery, improve the efficiency of the battery, and not cost more to produce. That's part of the deal, that it won't cost more. And Toyota apparently is close on this. They're talking about having something by about 2030. And they say that the efficiency...
It's about 5 years away.
About 5 years away. The efficiency of the battery... Well, something in a car. So not just like on a bench being tested.
Okay.
So we'll see. Because remember, Fisker, which is already gone, was going to have with solid-state batteries.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen.
No.
But Toyota's talking about a 70% improvement in efficiency.
Okay.
Which they may not need. Right? If you can go half of that to range and half of that to reducing the size of the battery, which should reduce its cost and its weight, well, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to, it's a vocabulary word for the kids.
Okay.
Solid state.
Yes.
The other one, interesting, is Stellantis is working on sulfur ion batteries.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Is it sodium or sulfur? I have it here.
It's going to smell
sodium.
Like, I was like, it's going to smell like rotten eggs.
It's sodium ion batteries. There is a sulfur technology,
okay,
too. But it's sodium ion batteries. And Stellantis has invested in French company Tiamat.
Okay.
To develop these batteries for them. So that's a piece of news there.
Okay.
We'll see what happens with that. No big deal. But you're going to like this story. Do you like the color turquoise?
T-U-R-Q-U-O-I-S-E. Yes.
Mercedes-Benz.
Okay.
Which we don't hear as much about here in the U.S., but they're also working on autonomous vehicles. And they have a level 3 system that's available in some markets, which means you can take your hands off and not pay attention.
Yes.
Level 3. That's a big deal.
Yes.
For autonomy. One of the things that they're working on and they're trying to get approval from and may become a standard in the United States is turquoise lights. And what this is in the headlight and the headlight units and the taillight assemblies, when the vehicle is in autonomous mode, which means that the driver is playing, you know, Words with Friends, the assemblies light up in turquoise. So you can tell that another vehicle, the driver's not paying attention.
Yeah.
So, and apparently California has approved this.
Interesting.
So we may see this. This may become some sort of standard.
Okay.
I'd like to see this in action. I couldn't find anything on YouTube yet, so I got to poke around, but that's a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Over the weekend, I think it was, you posted an article that answered a question I had a couple of shows ago. And I was confused a little bit by Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of Toyota?
No, never.
They've redesigned the 4Runner. They've redesigned the Land Cruiser.
Yep.
The 4Runner got a little more expensive. The Land Cruiser got a little less expensive.
Yep.
And I was confused about where they play relative to each other.
Right.
In the Toyota lineup.
Yeah. And I'll be
and
honest
you looked
with you.
Into this.
I don't know that I actually answered the question. So what I thought was really interesting, so I did a spec-by-spec comparison on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and I dug into... The specs. So the Toyota 4Runner actually has a spec sheet on the press room. The Land Cruiser does not.
Weird.
I know. So I had to, and I even asked for it, and they're like, no, we don't have one. So I had to kind of go to the consumer site to get the information, and sometimes... like if the information wasn't available for both, then I just deleted the line. So, so it's probably not as complete of a spec comparison as I would normally do. But what I found was like they're built on the same wheelbase, same platform, you know, essentially the same length.
About the same, yeah. They're 1 inch off. I did check that myself.
But the Land Cruiser is a lot heavier, and the 4Runner has a very large price. Spread. So it starts at about $40,000, goes up to about $65,000-$70,000. Whereas you have the Land Cruiser, which is kind of just stuck in the sweet spot.
And it's just two trim levels.
Just two trim levels.
One of them is temporary. Isn't it called the Founder Edition or something?
That doesn't exist anymore. So there were three trims.
Oh.
For the line. I didn't see the Founder's Edition. So they have 1958 and then Land Cruiser.
That's it. And 58 gets you the round headlights.
Yes.
It's kind of a throwback.
And I think that the original like launch edition or founder's edition, whatever that was, also had the round headlights.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But just two trims on the website. And you know, and it's I just thought it was really interesting because from the side they kind of looked similar. From the front they don't look that similar. And you know,
I not to interrupt you, but I am interrupting you.
You are.
The round headlights do not get you a retro look. They're just round headlights.
It makes me think of the FJ Cruiser a little bit.
I guess that's retro now, but that was supposed to look like an old retro Toyota as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so at any rate, I just thought digging into specs a little bit, we would be able to have a more definitive answer of like how they're different. And I mean, I think you see how they're the same, but I think the Land Cruiser is going to be more of a niche product for a smaller sect of people.
And that traditionally has been the case. It used to be very expensive.
Yeah. And the 4Runner is going to be more for everybody. And it has two powertrain options. It has, you know, two-wheel drive versus and four-wheel drive. Whereas, again, Land Cruiser, one powertrain, it's just the hybrid. The Land Cruiser just has four-wheel drive. The Land Cruiser requires premium fuel. The 4Runner in the gasoline powertrain just requires regular fuel. But if you upgrade to the hybrid powertrain, requires premium
which is
fuel.
The same.
Yes.
So the i4, was it i4 Max?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the same in both, but you can get a more affordable...
Yes.
Runs on regular powertrain in the 4Runner. So this is my takeaway from this. 4Runner is less expensive, mm-hmm. probably more family-friendly. It's available with a third row.
It is.
What, there was a third thing I was going for here. the Land Cruiser is more serious about off-road stuff, though the 4Runner is probably excellent off-road.
It is.
I wouldn't sell it short. That's always been kind of its thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought it was really interesting to kind of dig into it a little bit, and I don't know that I have any real answers other than Land Cruiser is more of a niche product.
And then check them out. Now, you've been in both.
Yes.
Is Land Cruiser interior nicer?
So I was actually in the 1958 edition. Which is cheaper, and it was a very basic cloth interior. I liked it.
Uh-huh.
But it is definitely, I don't know if nicer, I wouldn't say it's nicer. But I wouldn't say it's cheaper, if that makes sense. It's not luxe level, but it's attractive and handsome, but without being like bougie, if that makes sense.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
We talked about something last week too, and I just wanted to get back to it. The NAC system, North American Charging Standard, of Teslas.
Yeah.
And the important thing about that is we noted that it's already out there now. Manufacturers are using it because you drove the Hyundai Ioniq 5.
Correct.
That has it in everything but the N.
Correct.
Because the N came out a little bit earlier.
Yes.
So that's interesting. The thing about that is that makes it's a really bad idea to set Tesla charging systems, charging stations on fire for that reason.
Yeah. Why are people doing that?
I'm sure there's a bunch of reasons, but Elon's not making friends in the U.S. or anywhere else.
That is true.
Actually, I wasn't going to do this right now, but I had this conversation with Steve and Johnny Saturday night. Thank you, Steve and Johnny, for giving me 5 minutes to mumble. But the point I wanted to make was, no matter what you think about Elon Musk right now or you think about Tesla, the fact is that Tesla is now an employer in the U.S., that hires 125,000 Americans,
mm-hmm.
and we would not want them to lose their jobs. But you see, you're grimacing, but this is a company in the U.S., and it is really the U.S.'s EV center, right? Tesla made EVs work. Remember, too, that Elon Musk didn't found Tesla. He just jumped in the middle someplace. And it's a thing that a lot of people forget. And this is a company that would move on without him and probably move on successfully. So the thing that we're waiting for, the thing that we're watching for, is to see if the board ever musters the courage to get rid of him, because he's not doing the company any good now. But we do not want to see Tesla fail.
No.
They sell a lot of cars here in the U.S. If you're green-minded, Teslas are very green. If you're economy-minded, Tesla contributes mightily to the U.S. economy. They're now the fourth biggest car maker in the U.S. That's a big deal.
Well, and I would even say that Tesla was the change maker. Like, people were very reticent to go, automakers were very reticent to go into the electric realm. And then here comes Tesla, taking the world by storm in 2012. And, people had no choice, automakers had no choice, but to kind of follow and try and compete. And so.
Sure, because before Elon Musk, EV sucked, right? The electric vehicles you can get in the U.S. were the Chevrolet Volt, which wasn't really an electric vehicle, and the Nissan Leaf.
Correct.
And both of those vehicles had limited range. They were mm-hmm. made to be very light and very small.
Oh, you forget the Mitsubishi IMEV.
Well, that was worse.
That was not good.
That was a terrible little car. and unless you were just some sort of crazy miser who just really, really enjoyed the efficiency of mm-hmm. it. What a terrible little car.
Okay.
It was awful. We had a long-term one at the office, mm-hmm. and it was damn unpleasant. And I was just really glad that as a senior staffer, I never got stuck with it. Although I did sometimes.
Right.
But that's what EVs were. And then the Tesla Model S came around, and it was big, and it was fast, and it was luxurious.
And it had range.
And it had range, and it changed everything.
Yeah.
And that's what EVs could be. And then the Model X came out, which was a crossover based on that vehicle. And that never latched on with the public, but it was a luxury vehicle. It sold in some nominal volume. It never sold well. But it was also a car that went up to 160 grand, so that was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And then, dang, the Model 3 came out. Small sedan, and Tesla started setting the world on fire. These were vehicles. Tesla had made EVs cool.
Yep.
And now there were affordable, cool versions of it. And the Model Y, the best-selling car in the U.S., or not the best-selling car, but one of the best-selling cars in the U.S. and the best-selling EV, I think, in the world still. This is accomplishment. This is cool stuff. And we want to separate that from the horror story That is Elon Musk's really weird foray into politics. And he did this in Germany, too, where he supported the far-right party there. And Tesla sales in Germany have slipped 70%.
Yeah.
In February, their sales slipped 70% in a market that grew by 40%.
Right.
So that's bad news.
Yeah, definitely not good news.
But the charging network, too, keep in mind that the current administration isn't going to support the development of a charging network. So the fact that Tesla has opened up its charging network to other manufacturers is more important now than it was.
Yeah.
Additionally, Iona, which is the big network of manufacturers building their own charging network, and General Motors and BMW, and I'm trying to remember, is Ford involved? Ford might not be involved. Mm. But a big group of manufacturers intends to build an awful lot of charging stations by 2030. So that's good, too.
Yeah.
So the momentum, though somewhat blunted by the current administration, isn't gone. And it's ironic, I think, that while Elon Musk is busy destroying his own business, his charging network is going to work to actually keep the momentum moving.
Yeah.
That's my vent, that this is a very complicated thing. And I think it's a complicated thing emotionally for people.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people who had bought these vehicles with, you know, they were blue staters, they were left wing, and they had very green-minded intentions when they bought the vehicle, they feel betrayed. But you still have a green car.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. I was looking at something today, and there's apparently bumper stickers out there that I bought this before Elon went crazy.
I've seen that. I actually put that in an article.
Okay. So maybe I saw it from you. And the other thing I should point out is the automakers that have signed on to NACS, to the Tesla charging network, they are, you know, so the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is the only one that has the factory-installed NACS plug or port. But the automakers like Ford I think Hyundai to some extent, but the automakers who have promised that NACS is coming as a factory install are allowing you to purchase a charger.
Depends
adapter.
On the deal.
Yeah.
They're often giving them away when you buy the car, but not always. Hold out.
Yeah, hold out. Make it part of the deal. But retroactively,
because good ones, $200.
Yeah, $250. I think is essentially what I've been seeing,
okay.
Especially for the Ford vehicles. So
the Ford one weighs 8 pounds.
Yeah.
Have you touched one of these?
No, I have not.
I had the Lightning, the Ford F-150 Lightning, as a test car recently, and there was one sitting in the car, and I didn't get around to charge it at a Tesla station, but it's in a box. It's very professionally boxed and stuff. Mm-hmm. It looks like a high-quality piece of equipment. It weighs a ton. I'm shocked by how much it weighs. But
do curls with it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it just weighs that much to make you think it's good quality or because it is good quality.
Yeah, because it's not going to burn up when you try and plug it in. Because there have been, the aftermarket ones are, melting.
Yeah. Aftermarket maker Lectron, I'm trying to get them on the show. They build really high-quality ones.
Okay.
So I'm reading good reviews of those.
Okay.
So if you need to buy one yourself, Lectron.
Lectron.
Yeah.
Or from the automaker.
Yeah. I don't know what happens. You invite someone on the show, they're like, yeah, throw me some dates, and then they disappear.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know. Do they learn something about me they don't like?
Yes. apparently they saw last week's video and they're like, nope, I'm good.
Yeah, that's what that dude looks like. Okay. I got a haircut.
You did. And you know what? I want to say you look really nice today. I like your shirt,
what?
Your haircut.
What?
The watch is new.
The watch doesn't match.
No, it doesn't match.
I was wearing the green
really cool.
watch, and now I've got the green shirt and the blue. I like this blue watch.
I love that watch. Really cool.
Yeah, I got that so cheap.
You're looking
cheap.
Very nice today.
Well, thank you. Uh-huh. I got that watch so cheap.
it's cool.
eBay is the greatest place in the world for watch collectors.
Okay.
All right. I think that was my wine, my lament.
Okay, your lament.
If we have time later in the show, I want to talk about Polestar.
Yes.
You're driving the Polestar 3.
Yes.
Interesting vehicle, interesting company.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what comes of that. But in a moment, finally, for the first time this year, our good friend Sam Fiorani joins the show.
Yes.
I don't even have notes for that conversation because
we're just going to let him talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got questions.
Okay.
They're up here.
Okay.
I might not share with them.
Your questions, so.
I'll share them in the break.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
All right.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. We're talking about a bunch of stuff. You just heard my Tesla lament. We're going to be talking more Tesla in a moment, I think.
Okay.
But help me out here real quick.
Yeah, you would like me to prompt you to talk about social media.
I would. Thank you. That was easy.
It was totally easy.
I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter, X, and on Blue Sky.
Yes, ex-Twitter.
And I did a nice bunch of fun car spotter activity this weekend.
Okay.
Including, I see Saturns everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
General Motors, now defunct brand that was going to change the world. And they kind of did. For a little while, Saturn was a great company. But the first generation Saturn, the SL, the SL1, the SL2, I don't know what it is, but before they refreshed it, those vehicles have disappeared from the planet.
Mm.
The ones after the refresh, which I think represented greater volume, I see everywhere.
Yeah.
But I don't see the first-gen cars. My sister had a first-gen car. Lasted forever. Nothing but good. It was a little noisy.
Yeah.
Maybe a little crude. Fantastic fuel economy. Ran forever.
Well, and I posted in my stories on Facebook this week. I was cleaning out my storage locker and found a picture of me buying my first car, which was a Saturn.
Well, and wasn't that the midsize sedan?
No, it was the SE.
Oh, the SE. You had the coupe. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also available in 1 and 2.
Correct. And I loved that car.
Actually, there was a base too, wasn't there? Oh, not of the coupe, just a sedan.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. People who had Saturns tend to have liked them. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's been a while. On the phone with us is Sam Fiorani, Vice President of Global Forecasting at Auto Forecast Solutions. Sam, how are you, sir?
Doing very well. How are you guys?
We're flummoxed, perplexed, tired.
All of those things, and I'm eating a cinnamon donut.
I remember when we used to talk about cars.
What?
Yes, we all loved cars at one time.
And now they're just something we have to talk about in the abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, tell us real quick what you do at Auto Forecast Solutions.
Auto Forecast Solutions provides analytical and forecasting data to the automotive industry. We supply forecasts going out to 2037 on vehicles and powertrains, as well as not only production numbers, but sales and timing of new vehicles.
Sam, did you just say 2037?
Correct, 2037.
Wow, that's some reach. And before we get into the nightmare that is the current auto industry, I'm super interested in where you guys get your information and how you guys come to your conclusions you draw. But you guys also follow manufacturing very closely, right? You follow the supply chain, and that's where you guys get a bunch of your info?
Absolutely, yeah. Our goal is to understand which manufacturers are making which products, and we have all kinds of sources that provide us that kind of data.
See, here's the thing that I used to like. Now, Automotive News, which is a great, great publication if you care about the industry from the inside, publishes their future product issues late in the model year every year, and that's a great way to find information. But the better place, usually, is that the NADA convention, the North American Dealer Association convention, where a bunch of drunk dealers go into rooms, learn all sorts of information they're not supposed to share.
Take pictures.
And immediately leave the room and share all the information.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They do love to talk to media afterward, and the manufacturers are not friendly with that.
It's always funny. And this year's NADA convention was a bust because they had a blizzard down. Was that
New Orleans?
In New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah,
so that
people
didn't
couldn't
happen.
Get there.
All right.
New Orleans.
Oh, Sam, also congratulations. You've just been named president of the International Motor Press Association?
That is correct, yes.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
I've been a member for about 30-some years. No, absolutely. I treat it as if I were standing in line and they said, volunteer, step forward, and everyone else step back.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the honor. We apologize for the work that that's going to be. Jill and I both spent time as president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, which means you also spent time as vice president.
Yes.
And that is 4 years of commitment.
Yeah, but you left before we made the president emeritus also a board position. So ultimately, your commitment is now 6 years.
Although I did hang around anyway.
Did you? Did you?
Yeah, my vice president, when I was, he disappeared. He literally just retired. The day he was done with Mama, he just retired, and I never saw him again.
Was that Jim?
That was Jim.
Okay, yeah. I reach out to him occasionally.
Do you? Does he answer?
He does. He's in Phoenix now.
I should talk to him.
Yeah.
Sorry, we digress. So, Sam, it's been quite a year so far in the auto industry. Actually, I wanted to ask you something real quick. We've been playing with the tariffs.
Quiet.
The tariffs are on, the tariffs are off. And we've just seen a suspension of the tariffs on the auto industry for 30 days. What does 30 days get the auto industry?
A lot of confusion.
and anxiety, I think.
Absolutely. This industry does not like change, does not like questions, does not like any of that. And unfortunately, that's what we're in at the moment. Threatening a tariff one day and then pulling it off for a month means we have a month to sit around and think, are you going to put the tariff on again? And this industry, North America, works as a single unit.
Yeah.
So putting a tariff on Canada or Mexico screws up everybody's budget, screws up everybody's supply chain, and just confuses manufacturing, the supply chain, and consumers, because suddenly those vehicles are more expensive.
And ultimately, if the goal here, and this is not necessarily understood to be the goal, but if the goal here is to bring all manufacturing to the United States, no matter what, that might bring more employment, but that's good. That's good. But it's going to bring considerable additional cost because the labor is so much more expensive here.
Yes, and raising the price of vehicles is going to sour sales. So people aren't going to buy as many, which means the production will be down, which means the net increase in jobs will be minimal as they try to fill the plants that are there with the people who are there, just to get a few hundred thousand more vehicles possibly built in the United States. There's a reason why vehicles are imported from South Korea or from Mexico, and that's usually price.
Yeah.
So we already have a problem with vehicles being too expensive now, and when you remove those inexpensive vehicles that are currently being built in Mexico or South Korea, then the average price of the vehicle goes up even more and pushes more people into used cars. Now used car prices go up, and it just snowballs from there. So people who need those entry-level models won't be able to get them, and they're going to have to nurse their used cars for even longer.
Yep, that's a problem. One of the arguments I've been forced to make, and you can tell me about whether or not you think this makes sense to you, but applying a tariff to a vehicle makes the vehicle more expensive, which means that people are going to buy fewer vehicles, but they're also going to have less money to spend elsewhere. And this tariff, this upfront cost on a product, essentially, I think, takes the buzz off the economy, because people have less money to spend elsewhere. They have older cars. They're going to be less reliable. They're going to have less money in their pocket. And it just seems like the snowball effect is huge. And people supporting the tariff seem to suggest that somehow this is all good for the American market, but it's devastating.
The idea of a tariff to most people is that it brings jobs to the U.S., it increases the American economy, and potentially charges the foreign companies the tariff. The tariff goes to whoever buys the product, and manufacturers are not going to just absorb a 25% tariff,
right?
They're going to pass that on to the consumer, and the consumer will pay that tariff, plus they're going to pay more for every competing product because the market has raised the prices. You're not going to suddenly see U.S.-built vehicles staying the same or going down in price. You're going to see them go up because the market gave them that ability to go up. The tariffs are not a good thing, especially when you're in a free trade organization like a USMCA.
Right.
And all the products here are designed to be built across borders and be shipped across borders. We've been working this way since the 60s, since the U.S. and Canada had the Auto Pact, and it started trading vehicles across there. The tariff cannot help the American economy.
So we saw this week that the UAW is actually starting to support the tariff. And, you know, from what you just said, that prices are going to go up all around, which means people are going to start buying more used cars and less new cars, which does not help the UAW at all. I'm just wondering if you can shed some light on why they might be supporting this tariff.
They're supporting the tariff under the guise that there will be more vehicles built in the U.S. And while that is potentially true, it's not going to be so many more that it's going to maintain the current market size. If you bring more vehicles here, the average price is going to go up of all vehicles. You're going to sell fewer, which is going to take fewer people to build. Mm. So if we gain anything, we'll gain maybe 10,000 manufacturing jobs at best, but it's not going to increase the sales of vehicles. You're going to get more expensive vehicles, more people moving into used vehicles, and it's going to depress the economy more than free trade across the three countries would.
Sam, let's look at the automakers now, not so much as victims of this, but as potential victors, in that after COVID, we saw that auto manufacturers were able to make a lot more money, or not more money, but greater profits selling fewer vehicles when the supply chain was crimped. Is that something that could potentially come out of this?
With the supply chain issues that we had after COVID, there were fewer vehicles on the market because they couldn't build them.
Right.
But the demand remained high, so the prices went up, and manufacturers and dealers made a lot more money. In this case, a similar thing would happen, but it's from the other direction, where the prices will go up and demand will fall. Mm-hmm. And building what would probably be a similar number of vehicles for the manufacturers, but at a higher price, would make them more money.
So, Sam, I'm going to ask you to use your crystal ball. Hmm. What do you think is going to happen now?
Well, we have a dartboard, by the way, and we say that if the tariffs are applied, we could potentially see a recession by the end of the year.
Wow!
If there's a problem when all these supply chains are set up for three countries, and you cannot move a supplier who's based in Canada or a supplier who's based in Mexico to the United States overnight, you definitely can't move assembly lines that quickly. These things take months or years. They take hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars to do. It is not cheap, and it will take time for that to happen. In the meantime, you'll have fewer vehicles, you'll have more expensive vehicles, and it'll turn the economy sour. It may not be a deep recession, but the potential of a recession before the end of this year with tariffs would go up dramatically.
Wow. Sam, we had talked a little bit about what would happen in Mexico in the event that manufacturers pulled out, but I want to run this past you real quick. If U.S. makers Japanese and German makers too have to pull out of Mexico to make this work, doesn't that leave a lot of assembled factories that are relatively new just sitting there for the Chinese to buy?
It would, but Mexico has free trade agreements with Brazil as well.
Mm. Oh.
So a lot of vehicles go south. It's not just supplying the U.S., although a large number of the vehicles do come to the U.S. and Canada. A number of them are consumed locally and are shipped to Brazil. So there's still a lot of room in the economy there. But from NAFTA and USMCA, we've been raising the living standards of Mexicans who would buy American products.
Right.
That's the whole idea of NAFTA in the first place, was to make
right.
Mexicans richer to buy American and Canadian products.
And that worked to some extent, too.
Yes, it has worked. And we've seen that growth over the years, over the last 30 years. But stifling that now will not do much for the American economy.
I want to switch gears for a second and talk a little bit about Tesla. As I'm sure you're best aware, Tesla sales are in a free fall right now, and they're down in China, they're down big in Western Europe, and they're down in the U.S. My question has to do with Tesla manufacturing, and is this a bigger deal for Tesla than I think a lot of the media is reporting? And my point is that the Shanghai factory is huge, the new Berlin factory in Germany, designed to build vehicles for Western Europe, is huge, and the new Austin plant was supposed to build the Cybertruck, which no one seems to be buying. Does Tesla have a huge capacity headache that is a bigger problem than I think most people know?
They have the potential for a big problem. Right now, the two U.S. factories, as long as sales do not fall off a cliff, they are down, but they're still substantial. They could maintain their volumes. Germany is another problem because, like as you said, Europe has dropped by double digits in most countries. And if that continues after the introduction of the new Model Y, then Tesla absolutely has a problem. China's problem snowballs with the idea that the Chinese government may not like Elon Musk being friendly with the president, and the president trying to get more tariffs on Chinese products. So if he's made enemies with the Chinese government, that could hurt Tesla sales going forward, and that plant can build 1 million vehicles.
Yeah, that's a monster factory. real quick, we're running out of time here, but talk about China a little bit and how that market seems to be turning away from foreign brands. What is driving that exactly?
Quality. When the first Chinese vehicles came to the U.S. at the auto show like 20 years ago, at the Detroit Auto Show.
I remember.
They were funny. They were not good. they reminded me of, you know, the cheaper Japanese cars that came out in the 70s, but not the Toyotas and the Hondas, but eventually the Daihatsus and the Suzukis. They were not great cars. They have gotten much better, and now there's a kind of a patriotism with Chinese buyers who are looking for a good Chinese-built, Chinese-branded car, and they're finding them. And that's pushing American brands, European brands, and even the Japanese brands out of the market.
One of the things I've been hearing, too, is that the Chinese market has sort of peaked, and the actual appetite for cars in China isn't growing anymore. Is there some sort of federal backing there, some Chinese federal backing, to try to move people to purchase domestic vehicles?
Not as much as they need, but when we studied this issue 25 years ago, the potential growth of the Chinese market, it was all based on how many people are there and the growth, the natural growth of every market. And when we looked at China, the potential was astronomical, and we are just scratching the surface. So if they could get a better pay for a lot more people in China, you could see the growth peak again. But right now, it's kind of leveling off at where the buyers can afford a new vehicle.
Interesting. Good to know. All right, Sam, let's talk about something more fun. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right, what is going on at the Boyertown Museum of Historic Vehicles?
Oh, there's always something great going on there. Right now, we have a display of trucks in our lobby, and we just had Fashnacht Day, which was one of my favorite days of the year. Fat Tuesday, they have Pennsylvania Dutch Fashnacht, which are kind of a less sweet donut.
Okay.
And we open up the museum and the diner that is inside the museum, and sell Fashnachts for 10 cents a piece and coffee for a nickel. It's
fun.
It's a great day to hang out with people and see the museum and eat some good food.
And tell us where the museum is in case people are local.
The Boyertown Museum is in Boyertown, Pennsylvania, right downtown. It's walking distance from the shopping centers. And everybody should come and visit the museum and tell them I sent you, and you'll get charged full price. But, you know, it's still a great museum. And it has well over 200 years of history of automotive or of vehicular transportation from the Pennsylvania area.
Yeah, I have not been to the museum. I've certainly enjoyed the website, and it seems very cool. And one of the things you guys produce there intermittently is Afternoons with Sam and Kendra. Is there a new episode of that up yet?
Kendra and I are working on revising it so we can get some more viewership. But yes, we are working on new episodes.
Okay.
Check out our YouTube channel.
When you have one up, shoot us a line and we will share that.
Thank you very much.
All right, Sam, it was great talking to you today. Sam Fiorani with Auto Forecast Solutions. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. She's Jill Simonillo. We just talked a bunch of stuff.
We did.
I'm exhausted.
Yes.
It's quiz time.
Yes.
I'm sure I have a quiz here. You want to talk some social media first.
Yeah, I was like, don't skip my social media. I pimped yours.
I guess you did.
Or prompted your pimp.
I can't find the quiz. I found the quiz.
Okay, good.
All right.
I'm on social media. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Threads, Blue Sky. I'm on all of those things and probably many more. If there's a social media that I am not on that you think I should be on, I would love to be tagged on that. But I'm even on Lemon8.
Why?
I don't know. Because I like to see, like, I like to give people information where they are.
But they're not there. They're moving there.
But I want to move there first so that I can get more followers than you. But
how's that going?
I did not move to Blue Sky before you, so I don't know. Not well.
Well, I was there like 3 days before you, so I'm not really sure that counts.
Yeah, I think it does. That's like gives
I'm
you.
I'm frankly dynamic. People just are drawn to me.
I think it's your haircut.
That could be.
You can find me at Jill Simonillo, or I use the hashtag CarDuJour. Definitely find me. And on TikTok, I'm probably the most prolific there. I try to upload a new video or something every day. I'm putting out videos right now about the 2025 Kia Telluride.
Yeah. Steve and Johnny really want people to move to Blue Sky.
Yeah, you just totally like changed the subject on me again.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were done.
Well...
All right, go on.
No, I'm done.
All right. Jill, it's quiz time.
All right.
Car Stuff Podcast Power Quiz number 265, Dead Brand Fun, Oldsmobile or Pontiac? I'm going to give you a model. You just have to tell me if it was an Oldsmobile or a Pontiac. Very
easy. So it's
easy.
A real car, right?
Real car.
It's a real car. Really
real
car existed.
Is really sold in the U.S.
Really sold in the U.S. in like 1905 or something?
Oh, no, I don't go back before 1960.
Okay.
All right. I didn't go really old.
But you went older than me.
I went older than me.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a model.
Okay.
Intrigue.
And you're saying Oldsmobile or Pontiac?
Oldsmobile or Pontiac.
Pontiac Intrigue. Oldsmobile Intrigue.
I can give you a clue.
Okay.
Detective Sipowicz drove one on NYPD Blue.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Which is the weirdest thing in the world because it had to be product placement. It's in one episode, and it's like a full three-quarter shot of the car with him standing next to it. Like, that's weird.
Mm.
And then we never saw the car again.
Yeah. Okay, so neither Pontiac nor Oldsmobile Intrigue sounds good.
By the way, this is during your career, so you can't pull the old thing on me.
It's a 2000 or more?
All right, I'll give you the model range, 1998 to 2002.
Okay, so I didn't start writing about cars until 2003, but I did become the editor in 2001. So,
Intrigue. I'm going to need an answer.
Pontiac.
That's an Oldsmobile.
Okay.
Yeah, 1998 through 2002, it replaced the Cutlass Supreme. It was a midsize sedan. Very attractive.
Was it?
Yeah, it was actually very attractive. It was fitted with the Short Star V6.
Okay.
If you remember the catalog North Star. It was a version of that engine.
Okay.
All right. You have no points.
I have no points. Your favorite phrase.
Achieva. Achieva.
Yeah, definitely not one I've heard of.
Really?
No.
Sold a lot of them.
Pontiac.
That's an Oldsmobile. You're having a bad day.
I know. Pontiac and Oldsmobile, what, they both went away in 2008-ish?
Yeah. The Achieva was around from 1992 to 1998. It replaced the GM N-Body Skylark. And there was an a Pontiac on the platform called the Grand Am.
I do remember the Buick Skylark.
Yeah, Skylark name was around forever.
Okay.
All right. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
You have no points.
I'm just going to keep saying Pontiac.
By the way, five questions plus a bonus question. You need to get three total. Bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Okay.
Always.
Always.
Tempest.
Pontiac.
It is.
I'm just going to say Pontiac.
Tempest is an interesting one. There were various tempests over the years between 1960 and 1970. And then in Canada, rebadged the Chevy Corsica.
Okay.
As the Tempest.
All right.
Someday we need to talk at length. Maybe we get Don Sikora from Collectible Automobile here to talk about how weird Canada was. You would think it would be more normal, but one of the weird things about Canada is the population density is much lighter, much thinner than here in the U.S., which means that a dealership had to do more to reach more people over a broader range. So they couldn't put like a Mercury store next to a Ford store, right?
Because
that would be too much stuff. So what they did is a dealership, a Ford dealership, might have something that's high-end to sell as well. And they did. They had a brand called Monarch, and Mercury stores sometimes added something at the bottom. And they had a lineup, and I forgot what it was called now, Meteor. And that was lower price car. So it was very interesting. And one of the best ones ever. You're going to love this. So Dodge was Dodge. Dodge had trucks up in Canada, right?
Okay.
Dodge was fine. But you couldn't put a Dodge store next to a Chrysler Plymouth store. The population didn't justify it. So Chrysler Plymouth stores got Dodge trucks called Fargo. There were Dodge Plymouth Fargo dealerships up there. Fantastic.
Okay.
And the old ads are cool. And you're like, this is like having a weird fever dream. You're looking at this ad. I know this is a Dodge truck, but it says Fargo. It's fun.
Okay.
You have 1 point.
I have a point.
All right. Parisian.
Pontiac.
It is a Pontiac.
I'm like, that one I actually remember.
And Pontiac, Parisian has Canada roots too.
Okay.
But in 1982, Pontiac, for some reason in the U.S., and this was part of downsizing and gas prices, took the big car that was called the Bonneville or the Catalina, moved it down to the Le Mans architecture, the midsize, and called it the Bonneville Model G.
Okay.
And consumers said, no way. And a year later, they brought back the big car, but they called it Parisian.
Got it.
Left the Bonneville in the small platform. You have 2 points.
Woo!
You're in better shape now. T-1000.
I have never heard of this either. Oldsmobile.
Pontiac.
Ugh.
You're going to need the bonus question.
Yeah.
The T-1000 was just Pontiac's version of the Chevy Chevette. It was sold for more model years up in Canada again. But this is when Pontiac wanted to do a dumb thing and give everything a numeric name in their lineup. So there was the T-1000, the J-2000, which became the Sunbird, and the 6000, you might remember. It was their midsize car. All right. Bit of ugliness there. You've got 2 points. You need the bonus question. Luckily, you're all on this topic.
Okay. Is it the Hallmark Channel?
Oh, no. But every time we talk about lunch, you said, we need to go to Der Wiener Schnitzel.
Oh, yes. Absolutely, I said that.
Sadly, we'll need plane tickets because Der Wiener Schnitzel, with 350 locations, only in California.
Okay.
But you know what they sell?
Wiener Schnitzel?
No, hot dogs. It's weird.
Okay.
They claim to be the world's largest hot dog chain.
Okay.
Which I guess that's more locations than
Portillo's.
They haven't
been to Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. So. All right. So large, there are no locations in Illinois. Are you ready? I need you to tell me which of the following is not a hot dog on the Der Wiener Schnitzel menu.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Der Wiener Schnitzel. These look good, by the way. I have a problem. None of their hot dogs have poppy seed buns. We can worry about that later.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
The Chop Suey Dog, the Kraut Dog, the Green Chili Chili Cheese Dog, that's Chili C-H-I-L-E-C-H-I-L-I,
Ooh.
Chili Chili.
Ooh, that sounds good, actually.
It just sounds really good. Or the Chicago Veggie Dog, Chop Suey Dog, Kraut Dog, Green Chili Chili Cheese Dog, Chicago Veggie Dog.
Well, considering that they don't have anything in Chicago, I mean, come on. But I think the chili chili has to be real.
All right.
That
is real.
Yeah, that has to be real. What were the first two again?
The Chop Suey Dog.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's some strong Asian influence in California. Or the Kraut Dog. And then the Chicago
Kraut or Kraut?
Kraut. K-R-A-U-T. Kraut.
Okay, I think that's probably real.
That's a huge New York thing.
Is it?
Putting sauerkraut in a dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Never had that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's good.
Okay.
Completely normal thing. They may not sell it in California.
Well, that's true. But I think that sounds viable. The Chop Suey Dog or the Chicago Dog is what has me. Because, Chicago dogs are weird.
Well, they're very specific and unique to this area.
They are very specific and unique to this area. And
celery
they have
salt.
Celery salt and very bright green relish.
I don't know anything else in the world that has celery salt on its standard.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a problem with thinking of them having like a very specific hot dog like that on their menu.
And it's veggie, Chicago veggie dog.
I know. Well, I think, see, now that right there has to mean it's made up.
Well, California.
But this is a you thing.
It is.
Because you're a veggie.
It is.
You're veg.
It is, by the way. Portillo's sells a veggie dog.
Okay.
Thank you. It's very good.
Very good. The only time I eat hot dogs are at baseball games.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think they're kind of disgusting.
Just mustard?
And onion.
Oh.
Mustard and onion.
You know what's cool and absolutely disgusting?
Mm-hmm.
At Wrigley Field,
mm-hmm.
you get a hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
You get packets of mustard.
Uh-huh.
But there's the onion crank thing.
Oh, yeah. The onion crank thing.
It cranks out onions. I'm like, that's weird. It's kind of cool because I could eat 7 pounds of chopped onions. But
mm-hmm.
also, that machine looks nasty.
It does.
If you're talking about like just like bacteria.
You may as well go get on the L in Chicago and just lick one of the poles. That's kind of what that is.
Which I would do for some of those onions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of them, but I embrace them. I have done it. And you know, they do now have the pump mustard.
Yeah.
So I'll do like the pump mustard and then like kind of like roll the hot dog and put the onions underneath.
Yeah.
And then
packets of mustard are weird.
Yeah.
Did you know McDonald's has mustard packets? You have to ask for them.
Hmm. Okay. I used to like
they
mustard on French fries.
All right. Did you ever see Sling Blade?
No.
Comes up there.
Okay.
All right. Chop suey dog, Chicago veggie dog.
I got to go Chicago veggie dog. That's too specifically you.
As the fake.
Yeah.
That is real.
Wow.
The chop suey dog is the fake. And in fact, they sell a Chicago dog and a Chicago veggie dog.
Really?
Yeah. I think that if you're doing regional dogs, you just got to recognize Chicago, which is hyper-regional.
But the veggie one is what, that veggie part of it is what threw me because you are veg. And so I'm like, that has to be you making it up.
Well, I'm capable of removing myself from...
Are you?
Yeah,
sort
of.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
How many times today did I mention the Volkswagen Scirocco? Not once.
Now once?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I can remove myself sometimes from the story.
All right.
Or insert myself if needlessly.
Okay.
Because I feel like I need attention.
Okay.
You didn't win today.
I did not.
Is this the first one you... No, you lost...
No, I had one where I missed every single question.
Yeah, like two episodes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I will sign this, but I have to write the word loser on it.
No, I don't want it. I'm not taking it.
So there it is. I wrote the word loser. You can throw it out. Here you go.
No, I don't want it. I'm not touching it.
I'm throwing it out.
Fine.
Okay. All right. We have just a little bit of time.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk about something that has been more or less a reboot. I did make the basket. Polestar.
Yes.
You are driving a Polestar right now.
Well, last week I was.
Oh, okay. You're not in it anymore. But the interesting thing about Polestar is I don't think everyone knows what this is.
No. And it's really funny because during the test week, people kept asking me, what is that?
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. Polestar was first a performance,
mm-hmm.
not well used, performance sub-brand of Volvo.
Yep.
So there were Polestar and Polestar engineered vehicles.
But people who knew Polestar knew Polestar.
Yeah. And it was their tuning brand, like AMG is mm-hmm. at Mercedes or M is at BMW. And then Genesis just added one. I forgot what it was. Is it Magma?
Yeah, they have they haven't produced any vehicles with it, but they've had some concept cars, the Magma.
Yeah.
Magma.
So the performance brands, they come and go.
Mm-hmm.
But Polestar is now a separate brand.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to remember here is that Polestar is actually owned by Geely.
As is Volvo. Blah, blah. Volvo.
As is Volvo, yep.
If I can say that.
I know what you were trying to say.
Yes.
And there was some confusion about Polestar because it was a division of Volvo for a while.
Yeah.
The finances got weird and mm-hmm. the whole thing stuttered.
Yeah.
And they stopped rolling out stuff. But here's what you need to know about Polestar. The cars look really good. They do look like Volvos, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
They are all high performance. They are all electric except for the Polestar 1, which is already sold out. That's long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be sold through normal dealers. Probably Volvo dealers, but not necessarily.
Okay.
So they should have, when they start rolling out in volume, which they haven't really done yet,
mm-hmm.
A reasonable network of support for owners. So the Polestar 2 was this adorable little sedan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, and it's based on the Volvo 40 architecture, I believe, but it's electric.
Okay.
And now you are driving the Polestar 3.
Yes.
which is based on what? The CX 40.
XC,
thank you, 40.
Yep.
I believe that architecture.
I think you are correct.
Or maybe it's I think it's all one architecture anyway, so we shouldn't belabor this point. Yep. And then a 4 is coming out. It'll be more expensive, and it's kind of a weird coupe crossover thing. Hard to figure. That's not going to be a volume car. You're driving the volume car.
Yeah.
So the fun thing to do, and I don't have a list here, is just check out Polestar and then check out dealerships, because there aren't a lot of them yet.
Right.
There's a couple in California. I think they started on the East Coast, though, and there's stores in Chicago, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've seen them on the streets in Chicago, and it's funny because whenever I see one, I'm just like, damn, that's a handsome vehicle.
They're good-looking vehicles. Yeah. I like the look a lot.
Yeah. Well, and it's, so what's really funny is I was doing some video in my garage, and my neighbor who rides his bike to and from work was either leaving or coming or going. I can't remember which, but he passed by the vehicle, and he like literally, because I had the garage door open, and he like drove past, or, well, rode past the garage, and then like literally like backed up. And he like looked at me, and he was like, he gave me like the thumbs up. He's like, that's really cool. So I like it. There are some things that I did not like about it, and the biggest thing is they put all of the controls and adjustments in the screen. They don't have any buttons or dials except for a volume dial.
That is very Tesla. It's also very Volvo.
It is. The new XC, C, CX, XC, EC, I don't know. The electric version of the 90.
The sedan, the new ES90 sedan?
No.
That's the EX90.
No.
The EV?
XC. Oh, yeah. No, EX. Okay, yes. All of these stupid
alpha. I forgive you, because I would have gotten it wrong, too.
Numeric, whatever. But yeah. The electric version of the 90 has essentially the same operating system. So it's Google built-in, but then you have everything through the screen. The previous iterations of Volvo vehicles did give you some outside controls. Yeah. My biggest complaint with the Polestar 3, and there is a full video coming on this, is the fact that the side mirrors and the steering wheel have to be adjusted through the screen.
All right. We'll talk more about that vehicle later.
Yeah, but full video coming. So we'll talk about it when I have that video.
Guess what we did?
We talked.
Yes, we did. Big thanks to Sam Fiorani of Auto Forecast Solutions. Sorry it took us so long to bring Sam back. We'll have him on more often for the rest of the year. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.